when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, welcome, brothers and sisters. This is not Eddie. This is Rand Owens. But welcome, everyone, to this September 16th, 2023 edition of the Blood River Radio Program. And again, my name is Rand Owens. I will be trying to fill some big shoes today as I sit in for our chief, the Bombardier, Eddie Miller, during today's live broadcast. We have a jam-packed program in store for you today, and we're going to get right to it in just a few minutes. Our guest today will be a longtime league man and structural engineer, Mark Tomey. He's going to be with us, and he's going to share what he knows and what he believes about some of the events that took place 22 years ago as of this past 9/11. Later, we will be joined by our dear sister, Monica Schaefer, Sister Braveheart. She's going to be joining, and she's also very knowledgeable and has been involved with the 9/11 search for the truth in some way, shape, or form for a long time. And later, we will be joined, later in the program, we will be joined by Big Sister Nancy Hitt, and also our dear brother, the Bitter Ender, Mr. Gene Andrews. And we may talk about some different topics other than 9/11, which is going to be our main theme for today's program. And hopefully at some time, we will at least have enough time, a few minutes, to maybe update everyone on World War III. But before we go any further, as Eddie always says, this is a Christian program, and we always have a prayer. And if y'all would allow me, I'm going to read a few scriptures, and then we're going to have a prayer, and then we're going to get right into the meat of our program, bringing in Brother Mark Tomey. And, you know, I always second-guess myself about, you know, kind of do we spend enough time recognizing our Father, and I hope if we don't, he'll forgive us for it. But anyway, we're going to read a few scriptures. We're going to read from Ecclesiastes, the first chapter, chapter 1, verse 9, and it reads, "The thing that hath been, it is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done. There is no new thing under the sun." Key sentence there, nothing new under the sun. Now we're going to skip down the same chapter of Ecclesiastes to verse 18, chapter 1. "For in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow." And I think that can resonate with everyone here and in the listening audience, especially in the days that we're living in now. Now, real quickly, let's slip over to the New Testament. We're going to go to Matthew chapter 24, and I would highly encourage everyone to go back and read that whole chapter. I mean, we need to all read all scriptures, but go back and read that whole chapter of Matthew 24. But we're going to skip down to verse 8, and it starts and it says, all these are the beginning of sorrows. And verse 9, then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Now we're going to go straight to our Father in prayer, if y'all will. Bow with me. Father in heaven, Yahweh, we pray that your Holy Spirit would be with us today on this program. Father, we just pray that you would lead, guide, and direct. And Father, most of all, we want to thank you for Yeshua, the Messiah, the Christ, and his saving grace. And it's in his precious name that we pray these things. Amen. Now, before we go to Mark, we can't forget the donors. We got some donors this week. Eddie always reads them, and I'm going to do likewise. First of all, we have Ken, better known as Big Ben from Lynbrook, New York. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Ken. Thank you very much. Jim from Washington State. Thank you, sir, for your donation. All these people here are consistent donors. Jay-Z from Blood River Radio Zone AZ, Purple Heart Vietnam combat veteran and brother. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your donations. Thank you again, Ken and Jim. And Brother Jay-Z, as Brother Eddie says every week on here, this program could not go on without people like you helping and giving and helping out. And you know, I'd just like to say that these people here are solid as they come. They solid. They hear week in and week out. And let me just ask people, you know, whether you could give or not, do what little you can. Just a little small thing. Share about the program. Tell your friends and neighbors about the Blood River Radio program. And if you donate, that's good. We don't spend a lot of time asking for donations. We don't want to be beggars. But, you know, this program does need support. And we feel like that just by listening and the way that we try to present the truth week in and week out here on this program, we'll let that stand for itself. And hopefully people will like what they hear here, recognize that we need more people trying to get the truth out, and hopefully find it in their heart to give a little to the program when and if they can. Now, Eddie's not here today. Eddie is working the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital fundraiser in Memphis, Tennessee today, where he lives, his hometown. And anyone that listens to this program knows that Brother Eddie is a avid marathon runner, and these fundraisers and his running are very important to him. And I just want us all to keep Brother Eddie in our thoughts and prayers as we go through this program and each day, really. Eddie does a great job. He's a tireless worker to put on this program week in and week in out and try to put forth information that we believe needs to be put out there for everyone to have a chance to learn from. I'd also like to say that I am honored that he would entrust an old Alabama boy like me to sit in on this program today and kind of host it. And, of course, I'm going to do like he does. I'm going to bring in our knowledgeable guest and co-host, and I'm just going to try to stay back out of the way. So, Brother Mark, if you want to, I'm going to bring you on in. We're probably going to be going to a break pretty quick here. But when we get back, we'll just get right into the meat. We'll get right into the meat of this 9/11 report that we're going to go over today. But first of all, Mark, just introduce yourself. We've got about 30 seconds. Tell everybody your credentials and everything, and then we'll get ready to go next segment.
All right. Well, it's great to be on the program again, Rand, and you're doing a fine job hosting. I'm a licensed professional engineer. I've been practicing structural engineering for 40 years now. I hold licenses to practice in 29 states here in the U.S. and have designed all kinds of structures over the years, whether they were structural steel, reinforced concrete, masonry, timber, just about everything. So a broad background to be able to discuss this particular topic.
Good deal, Mark. I hear the music. I know you do too. Well, we'll be right back with Brother Mark Cooney. You're listening to Blood River Radio. Hang on. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
My name is Christian Knuckles. I prophesy there will be no revival until the church leadership stops lying to the people. I'm the first soldier of the spiritual body of Christ, the Lion of Judah, the Confederate Church of Christ. I'm here to declare the lion will lie down with the lamb when the lying stops. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries and brought to you by ConfederateChurchOfChrist.com.
Introducing Managed IT Services from NPI. We offer top-notch data backup and recovery, email spam protection, and network security tailored to your needs and budget. With 20-plus years of experience in the medical field, our HIPAA-certified consultants know what it takes to protect sensitive information. Don't settle for less. Give us a call at 801-706-6980 and experience the difference with Managed IT Services. Remember, your IT support should be fast, efficient, and reliable.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed, you have to say
somebody. Welcome back, everybody, to the Blood River Radio program. We got our guest, Mark Toomey, ready to go. You know, Mark, I was thinking today when I was kind of preparing a little bit earlier, and I couldn't help but smile to myself. And I know you remember several years back, you gave a fiery speech. And if anybody knows Mark at all or ever heard him speak, they know that he doesn't hold back. He lays it out there. But you gave a fiery speech down in Montgomery, Alabama, at the Confederate Memorial there beside the Capitol a few years back, Mark. You want to comment on that?
Oh yeah, that'll be a memory I'll carry with me till the day I die. It was a fun day, all things considered. And I had asked the person who invited me to speak, which is, and I think you know her too, Pat Godwin. And I asked her, I said, "Well, Pat, do you want me to give the typical milquetoast SCV type speech, or do you want me to peel the paint off the walls?" And she said, "Well, I want you to peel the paint off the walls." And so I said many things that they were not appreciative to hear.
Oh, you're
And
right. Yeah, they were
it
some of
got a
the brother. I'm sorry, Mark. They were some of the brethren that day that kind of got their feathers ruffled a little bit. That's for sure.
Yeah, they did. There were a couple of fellas that actually got up in my face. They were so upset about it. But Rand, I look at it this way. There's an old saying that says the truth hurts, and all I was doing was trying to tell the truth about the situation in which we find ourselves with the U.S. Empire as Southerners, and it touched a nerve, and rightly so. It should touch a nerve, and it should make them mad, and it should spur them to want to join us in trying to get our people free from this empire. But a lot of our folks are still not there yet, but the time's coming. They'll, as I've said for many years, circumstances are going to force them into our camp, whether they want to or not.
Yes. And just what you just said kind of goes along with some of the scripture that I read a few minutes ago, you know.
Exactly. Folks like been involved in Southern nationalism as long as you and I have. When you finally learn the truth and you are able to finally dispel from your head all and your heart all the lies you've been fed your whole life, it's painful to see your friends and family still suffer under those delusions, and it's a hard process to try to get them to wake up to the truth and the realities, the objective realities that are staring them in the face. But for most of our folks at this particular point in time, it's still m more comfortable for them to put their head back in the sand and just pretend that it's all okay.
Yep, you're right. You're right, Mark. Okay, we're gonna change gears now a little bit, and we're gonna go right into the meat of our theme today, which is the 9/11 anniversary. 22, well, it's the 9/11 a week ago or so, but the 22nd anniversary. But anyway, Mark. I know you told us a little bit about your credentials. I'm just going to let you kind of take it away, Mark, and just tell us what you, like I said earlier, what you know and what you believe about those events that took place 20 years, 22 years ago or so.
Yeah, well, I guess the first place to start would be with just a quick recollection of those days' events as they played out. And I was working at the time, and a friend of mine who had an office down the hall from me came and said, "Man, you got to come see what's happening on television. It's really crazy." And so by the time I got to the TV set, of course, one of the Twin Towers was already on fire and had smoke billowing out of it, and it wasn't too much longer after that that the other one caught on fire. And everything just happened so fast. There was so much new reporting going on from so many different sources, and it was kind of a strange deal. But I do very distinctly remember thinking to myself as the first of the Twin Towers began to collapse. The first thought that ran through my head was, there's just something not right about this. As I said before, I've been practicing structural engineering for 40 years now, and consider myself to be pretty well versed on how steel structures behave, how resilient they are, and some other things like that, and how they actually work. In reality, versus the way we as engineers tend to design them. We often design the different elements of a building as isolated pieces, but then of course we cobble all these pieces together and we coat them with concrete and pour slabs on top of them and other things like this. And so in reality, there are so many structural redundancies that are inherent in every structure that is built that we don't always necessarily take into account as part of the design process. And when and if you have a situation where you have a loss of strength in a member or several members in a particular area, you end up getting what structural engineers like myself call load redistribution. Because of all those interconnected parts and because of all of the redundancies that are actually there in real life, if you get a beam or a column that fails in one particular place and can't carry its load anymore, those loads get redistributed to members that are adjacent to them. And so you may get a partial collapse. You may get some excessive deflection in a floor or something like that, or you may even get a structure, if enough columns go out, it may try to lean over a little bit. But as a general rule, you know, we don't see the kind of catastrophic global structural failure of a building like we did on 9/11 for any other reason than a controlled demolition. And I'm sure there are a lot of people out there in the audience today who have probably watched either news reports in their local area when controlled demolition experts are coming in and they're taking down an old stack or chimney or demolishing an old hotel building or something like that. And we've all, you know, most of us have seen how these things work. And when they set off these explosions, they take place within nanoseconds of one another, but the objective is to completely obliterate all the vertical support of the building in one instant so that the structure collapses on its own footprint. And that's what we saw happen with three buildings in New York City on September the 11th of 2000. Something has always been rotten about that to me from the very beginning. And then as time went on and the quote unquote official government investigation and story came out as to how it happened and why and everything, I still just could never believe it. You know, I could never wrap my head around it because everything about the way that I've practiced structural engineering over the last 40 years just kept screaming to me that there's something terribly wrong with this explanation. You know, it just, too many things didn't add up or make sense. And then as time went on, I remembered that back in the late 90s, I had watched a documentary about the construction of the World Trade Center towers. And I forget, I think it was on Discovery Channel. But one of the things that I very distinctly recall was an interview that they did with a man named Leslie Robertson, who was the chief structural engineer for the Twin Tower project back in the late 60s. And part of that interview, he spent 5 or 10 minutes talking about how they began to think about these buildings and what kind of load conditions they needed to design them for. And he said, well, our design team was sitting around and somebody mentioned that, you know, back in the 1940s, a B-25 medium bomber flew into the side of the Empire State Building on a foggy night one night. And so he said, we got to thinking about it and said, well, you know, these both of these buildings are going to be on the approaches to both Kennedy and LaGuardia airports there in New York. And so he said, one of our design criteria for the Twin Towers was that they'd be able to withstand the impact of a fully fueled Boeing 707 anywhere on the surface of the structure and remain standing. Now, I've done a little investigation on my own since then, and if you go and look up the specifications for Boeing, well, I hear the music. We'll catch it on the other side of the break.
Yep. We'll be right back, folks, and we will continue this interesting conversation from Austin, the 10th of 9/11.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm John Schaefer. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton has been cleared of all charges and will retain his office. State senators deliberated on 16 articles of impeachment, ultimately acquitting him. To remove Paxton from office, he would have needed to have been convicted on just one of the articles. The accusations revolved around alleged misuse of his office to assist a political donor. On the second day of the UAW strike, discussions are underway between United Auto Workers and Ford and General Motors. Striking union members, including this UAW worker in Toledo, are advocating for improved pay and pension benefits.
We need more money. I mean, we've gone years without a raise. You know, we want our fair share. And that's what we're looking for, our fair share. You know, for everybody, not just for me, but for everybody that works here.
Negotiations, which paused on Friday, have now resumed, with both GM and Ford expressing their commitment. Union leaders are determined to secure what they describe as a robust and equitable contract. Jason Carter, the grandson of former President Jimmy Carter and Rosalind Carter, shared that the couple is in the final phase of their lives. He mentioned they are together at home, which he believes is an ideal situation for them at this stage. Earlier this year, the former president entered hospice care and Rosalind Carter was diagnosed with dementia. Police in New York investigating a fentanyl-related death at a daycare center involving a child. USA's Laura Winters has more.
Detectives in New York City blaming our wide-open southern border and an endless supply of fentanyl coming across for killing a child. Police in New York City say a one-year-old boy is dead and three other children, including a baby girl, are in the hospital after eating the drug at a daycare center in the Bronx. Firefighters responding to the scene wearing breathing equipment, as initially it was believed they were responding to a carbon monoxide leak. Detectives still trying to figure out who brought the drugs into the facility.
This is USA News.
Have you ever met a single person in your life that enjoys paying taxes? No, no one does. If you can't sleep at night because you have a huge problem with the IRS, I've got some free advice for you. This service is strictly limited to individuals that owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes. And if you qualify, we can guarantee that you won't be writing a big fat check to the IRS, or our services cost you nothing. The first 100 people that call today will get a free tax consultation worth $500. Stop worrying about your IRS problem. We can help you, we promise. Call the tax doctor right now. I mean right now to learn more.
800-215-2418. 800-215-2418. 800-215-2418. That's 800-215-2418.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
So welcome back, everybody, to the Blood River Radio program for September 16, 2023. Our guest is Mark Toomey, and he is a structural engineer, and he is discussing and going over what he believes may have happened and occurred on the events of 9/11 about 22 years ago. And we're, without any more pause, we're going to go straight back to Mark and let him continue. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, thanks, Rand. Yeah, just before the break, I was talking about the chief structural engineer talking about how they designed the buildings to take an impact from a 707 aircraft. And if you look up the specs for a 707 and a 757, which were supposedly the airplanes that hit the Twin Towers on 9/11, the weight of the aircraft, the wingspan, the fuel load, and a lot of other things that are, they're not identical, but they're so close as to not really introduce any doubt about the fact that if they designed it for an impact from one, it should survive an impact from the other. So my question, you know, when I heard the story, the official government story from their 9/11 commission report, you know, I thought back to that interview and I said, well, okay, either Mr. Robertson was lying or the 9/11 commission is lying. Now, which one is it? And the funny thing is that for the first year or so after 9/11, you could still go on YouTube and some of the other video channels, and you could actually find that documentary and see that segment of the interview with Mr. Robertson where he talked about that. But shortly, within a couple of years after 9/11, it disappeared. I've looked for it a couple times since then, and it's not out there to be found. And so I thought, well, let me see if there's, you know, any evidence of it out there on some other venue. And the only thing I found the other day when I was prepping for today's program was a transcript from a BBC interview that was done with Mr. Robertson sometime, oh, it's just been a few years ago, I think, if I remember the dates correctly. And guess what? He completely changed his story from the interview that he did on the Discovery Channel documentary from the late 90s. And so I started thinking to myself, well, okay, you know, what's a possible reason why he would change his explanation for how the towers were designed and what they were designed to withstand? And the only thing explanation I could come up with, knowing how evil the people are who actually own and control the U.S. empire and want to see its agendas advance, is that he probably got a visit from some guys in some dark suits and was told, you know, if you don't change your story to align with the official conclusion of the government investigation, it's possible that bad things might happen to you or your family. And So anybody who's looking for evidence of anything that he said, you know, anytime within the last 10 years or so, is going to get something that aligns up with the official government story. And it just doesn't wash. And, you know, one of the other things that always got to me about it, Rand, and you know, this is kind of off the engineering aspect of it a little bit, but, you know, if everything happened the way the government said, if in fact some terrorists flew airplanes into the side of those buildings and whatnot, then what we had was a huge crime scene. And, you know, normally when an investigation takes place after a crime, especially a crime of that magnitude is committed, the crime scene, you know, great pains are taken to see that the crime scene is preserved, so that investigators can gather as much evidence about what happened as they possibly can in order to piece together, you know, a scenario of what took place. Well, after 9/11, the very first thing that happened was they brought in bulldozers and trucks and backhoes and everything, and they destroyed that crime scene as quickly as possible. And all of that scrap metal and debris and everything was hauled off to who knows where. You know, nobody really knows where it is. Nobody's ever been allowed to investigate it, to go examine it, or do an independent evaluation of it. And, you know, when something like that happens, you know, a reasonable person should conclude that there's something fishy going on here that the U.S. government doesn't want us to know about. And so, you know, all these things come together, and it has just always been very doubtful in my mind that it all happened the way the NIST report said that it did. And, you know, then you take the example of building number 7, World Trade Center number 7. And, you know, if you've seen some of the video of that from that day, again, it collapsed directly down on its own footprint, and that building wasn't hit by anything. It didn't have any fire.
And I don't mean to interrupt you, but wasn't it like 5:30 that afternoon when it fell, when it collapsed? It was later in the day, I believe.
It was much later in the day, and so, you know, there were no fires of any significance anywhere inside the building or anything like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, magically it just falls down on its own footprint. And, you know, so there again, you know, you look at this kind of stuff and you think this is just not right. From an engineering standpoint, none of this makes any sense. And I've seen lots of people do amateur videos, over the years about trying to substantiate the government story about how the fires were so hot that the columns all melted, and that's the reason that the building fell down on itself, and this, that, and the other. And the problem with all these people's little amateur engineering experiments is that none of them accurately replicated the actual conditions of the way that building was constructed. You know, I saw a guy who's a blacksmith. He took a piece of metal rod, stuck it in a bed of hot coals, and, you know, shot air to it till it got heated up red hot. And then he took a pair of tongs and he bent it. And he said, "See, this is what happens to steel when it gets hot." You know, and I'm like, you know, that's an apple to an orange comparison, dude. I appreciate you making an effort, but you know, you're way off base. And then I saw another one where somebody tried to prove it by saying, "Well, look, we're going to put this single steel beam laying horizontally over a pool of jet fuel, and we're going to set the jet fuel on fire." Well, you know, after 2-3 hours of constant heat on that one beam in one location, it finally heated up and melted enough until it collapsed on itself. And here again, you know, we're comparing an apple to an orange. The conditions inside the building that day couldn't have been what was replicated by that experiment, because most people, I think, agree. I've heard a number of engineering explanations about this over the years, and I think the consensus of opinion is that the vast majority, if not all, of the jet fuel in the airplanes was consumed in the initial fireball after it hit the building. And so the fires were a result of the fuel igniting office furniture and paper and, you know, other types of things inside of the building there. And those things don't burn near as hot as jet fuel does. And even jet fuel itself, if you look at the burning temperature of it, and again, you can do a Google search on this and look it up, but the hottest temperature that jet fuel will burn at is only about half of the temperature that's required to cause steel to reach its melting point. Mm-hmm. So if all of that fuel was consumed within the first few seconds after the plane impact, and all that was burning in there was office furniture and paper products and other stuff like that. And I've heard people, you know, use the term, it was the evidence of the smoke coming out of the building indicated that it was a quote unquote cool fire, because it was dark black smoke instead of a light gray color, which means that the fire wasn't getting enough oxygen to sustain itself. And so, therefore, it doesn't burn at a high enough temperature to melt a steel beam or a steel column. And so, you know, here again, it just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, they say, well, the fireproofing got knocked off of the members. And, okay, well, maybe some of it did, but not every piece of fireproofing over the entire footprint of the building didn't get destroyed or get knocked off. And the fire didn't burn uniformly at a uniform temperature over the entire footprint of the building. So none of that, you know, answers the problem.
I hear the music, Mark. Thanks. Braveheart's on with us. We're going to bring her in when we come back. Hang on, people. You're listening to Blood River Radio, and we'll be right back.
Introducing PrepStartsNow.com, your ultimate guide to readiness and peace of mind. We offer practical preparedness tools, training, and education to take your family's household readiness to the next level. Browse the prep shop for essential products, check out our planning guides, and stay informed with our prep blog. Visit PrepStartsNow.com and subscribe to our emails for exclusive offers, new products, and future events. Remember, preparedness begins with PrepStartsNow.com.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
I'll tell you one thing that every good soldier knows. The only thing that counts in the end is power. Naked, merciless force!
Okay, welcome back, everybody. We're talking to Brother Mark Toomey about the events of 9/11. We've also been joined by Sister Braveheart, Monica Schaefer, who is going to join us in just a second. I just got a couple of comments before doing that. Mark, you kind of answered one of the questions I had, really, I was going to ask, is it possible that hot jet fuel could bring those buildings down in the fashion that it did? And I think that answer would be no, but I'll let you answer in just a second. But correct me if I'm wrong. I would think that it would take a lot of precise location of even using, for lack of a better way to put it, explosive to do demolition work, that you'd have to go in there and things would have to be in precise places, set off at the right time. Just seems like to me that it would be very difficult, because we need to think about the size and the magnitude of those structures, those buildings. There wouldn't be a simple task just to bring those buildings down. And really, if you think about it, if you go along with the logic that the planes brought it down, they'd be a lot, at least seems to me, they'd be a lot less time-wise, less expensive way to blow them up and bring them down if those planes did indeed bring them down in the fashion that they did.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, the jet fuel question, like I say, you know, and again, you can look this up, but the maximum open air burning temperature of jet fuel is only about half of the temperature it takes to make steel become molten again. And so, so that answers that question. The controlled demolition aspect of it, you know, I've seen a number of interviews over the years with the firefighters who responded to this, and all of them talked about hearing a series of explosions going off just before the buildings collapsed. You know, one fellow in particular, you know, he said, you know, you could hear it. It was going boom, 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 boom. And again, yeah. You know, for anybody who's ever watched video of any of these controlled demolitions that have been done over the years, that's exactly what it sounds like. And as I said before, the objective is that you do an analysis of the building from an engineering load carrying standpoint, and then you determine where are the optimum locations to place your explosives, so that in a twinkling of an eye, all of those charges explode and you take all of the vertical support away from that building, and gravity takes over and brings it down on its footprint. And so, you know, when I look at the collapse of all three of the World Trade Center buildings in New York on that day, you know, I see a controlled demolition on all three of them. And there were people who talked about there being a lot of strange people in the buildings at night for months prior to the attacks, you know, who were supposedly doing maintenance or this, that, or the other. And, you know, who's to say that those couldn't have been people who were, you know, planning those explosive charges? In the interest of pursuing every avenue of possibility, it's not that far-fetched a question to ask and it deserves to be looked into at least, you know. So, so again, you know, from my perspective as an engineer of, you know, 4 decades worth of practice, none of it has ever made sense to me. I've always considered it to be a murder scene, you know, and I think that it was the U.S. government, maybe in collusion with the Israelis, who were behind it, in order to get the war on terror drummed up. And you know, in the wake of 9/11, what did we get? We got the war on terror, which is still going on to this day, you know, to one extent or another. We got the Patriot Act, we got the TSA, we got the NSA, we got the surveillance state. We got a big facility out in Utah that covers hundreds of acres of area that's got computers in it that record every phone call, every email, and every text message that travels through the air or over a wire in the U.S. You know, and all of that is a result of 9/11. And all of that happened under those quote unquote good conservative Republicans like George W. Bush. So, you know, don't pour urine down my back and tell me it's raining. You know, there's something rotten in Denmark, and we still haven't gotten to the bottom of it yet.
Yeah, I agree, and we're gonna go without delay to Sister Monica. But you know, that's what the whole U.S. foreign policy is based on now, really, after the events of 9/11. But anyway, like yep. I said, without delay, let's go to Sister Monica. Come on in, Sister Monica, and join the conversation with Mark Toomey.
Good day. Thank you. This has just been absolutely fascinating. I am so interested in this subject. One big reason for that is that this 9/11 story is what was the key to my awakening to the fact that we are being lied to about just about everything that we've, you know, that we've ever been taught about history and about current affairs and current events. So 9/11 was the key to my awakening, and I do think that it was the key to many people's awakening. Mind you, I didn't learn the truth about it till 10 years later, about 2011. At the time, I didn't even have a computer nor a television. So mainly I was just hearing the audio reports. And so I wasn't getting those images over and over again, although I did see them, of course. You know, you got to be living in a cave if you don't see those images, just walking around and seeing them on screens in other places. But still, so it was about 9/11 that my brother and I kind of started going down this road together of waking up to it. But I am just thrilled to be talking on air with an engineer about this, because I'm not an engineer. So I've had, you know, people like a family member, a close family member who's not on board with us. And he, you know, has argued with me to say things like, oh, Monica, you know, we are not experts on this, and there's no way that we should be debating 9/11, because I pointed out so many obvious problems with it. I mean, just so many obvious problems that it doesn't actually take a rocket scientist to see that there are problems. But of course, we want to rely on the expertise of engineers and architects, and many have told us there are big problems. But anyway, and he would just say, oh, you know, leave it to the experts to basically leave it to the experts to do our thinking for us. So what are your comments about that kind of response? Like, are the rest of us, maybe we just shouldn't even be looking into these, you know, we can't make this diagnosis or whatever? Like, we talked a little bit in the break. Why don't you tell us what you were saying there, Mark?
Yeah, Monica. Well, you know, to preface it, let me say this, is that, you know, there are a lot of things that go on in the world that a person of average intelligence who has a certain amount of life experience under his belt can look at and make some generalized judgments and conclusions about things just based on common sense and life experience. And so from that standpoint, none of us should be precluded from looking into this event or questioning it in any way, simply from that standpoint. Now, As far as looking for a technical explanation as to how it happened, how the building collapsed and that kind of thing, well, then, yes, at that point, you know, it makes good sense to consult with people who are trained and educated in that field to be able to understand all of the physics and the structural mechanics and everything that goes along with how buildings are constructed and how they carry load and so on and so forth. And so naturally, it makes sense to go to people with that kind of expertise for those minutia type answers to these problems that common sense can't necessarily answer. If I'm sick, physically sick, and maybe have a serious illness, I'm going to go consult a physician. You know, I'm going to go to a guy who's been to medical school and has been trained as a doctor to try to figure out what's wrong with my body. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to go to my mechanic or somebody like that to find out what's wrong with me physically. Just like I'm not going to take my car to my physician's office and want to ask him why the engine's knocking. By the same token, and to me, here's where the big issue comes in with the official government reporting and everything, is that all engineers, especially once they become licensed professional engineers like myself, we're bound by a code of ethics. And there are certain things that we have to adhere to as far as honesty and integrity go in the practice of our profession. And so to me, the question comes in is with the 9/11 Commission report is, I can't help but question whether the engineers who contributed to that maintained their code of ethics requirements. You know, did they really tell the truth? Did they really honestly come to the right conclusions based on the evidence, or did they draw conclusions because there was political pressure put on them?
Well, here's a really important follow-up question based on what you just said. And, you know, again, I'm kind of basing this on, you know, the pushback I've had from family members who are not on board with Alfred and myself on this question. And I was handing out loads and loads and loads of educational materials from the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth and whatnot. So, and I was just so appreciative of the expertise of the AE 9/11 Truth, and that they were giving us those kinds of technical answers. And then it's up to the rest of us to connect the dots, like who's doing this and, you know, what are the motives and all that. But anyway, this family member, he said, oh, you know, 2000 or whatever it was at the time, 2000 architects and engineers signing this on, you know, pledging to be part of this organization. Do you know how many architects and engineers there are in all of, you know, America? Like, that's just such a tiny, tiny fraction. And I mean, to me, I know why perhaps not 100% of architects and engineers sign on, because I think that there might have been repercussions for some of the architects and engineers if they did sign on with this organization who is going against the government line. Maybe you have some experience with that, either yourself, did you suffer any repercussions, or maybe friends of yours or other people that you know of that maybe suffered job loss or that kind of thing? Like, was there political pressure against you or that kind of pressure that against signing on? I hope you're staying over into the second hour, because I do hear the music.
Yeah, we're about to go to a top of the hour break. This will be a little bit longer break than the others. It'll be a good time to get you some coffee, something to drink, restroom break, whatever. I hope Mark can stay over for at least a couple more segments. We'll continue when we come back.